Welcome to Talk is Jericho. This is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and we've got a live one today. The Duff McKagan joke of the week. Here we go.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan here. I'm sitting here with my wife, Susan. We just celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary. We're in London. We were here playing some gigs. She met me in Amsterdam and London. Awesome. And that's the best time ever. But did I tell you I had a job at the OJ factory that I got canned because I couldn't concentrate? Thank you very much. Good night.
Ah, yes. Another Duff, quote-unquote, classic. Lost his job at the orange juice factory because he couldn't concentrate. Get it? Thanks to Duff for calling him in every single week, even when he's on tour. And the Tenderness Tour resumes here in the United States next week, September 25th. Get your tickets at duffonline.com. And PWI-online.com is where you need to go to subscribe to the digital version of Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine. And you're going to want to do that this week because it's their annual PWI Top 500 Wrestlers of the Year. Dan Murphy compiles the list along with help from some of his other PWI writers. And he's here to talk about this year's top 10, break down the number ones and number 500s from all past issues. Let's see how many number 500s Dan can remember, how many you guys can remember, and how many have gone on to superstar status. All right, let's do it. Dan Murphy and the PWI Top 500. Here we go. All right, so very interesting. Every year when Pro Wrestling Illustrated comes out, which has been a part of my life, gosh, since probably the mid 80s, I used to subscribe to Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I used to subscribe to Superstars, I think it was. That was the one that you would always have the
dream matches.
The dream matches. Yeah, I subscribed to that one, which is great. But every year, the two that came out that I always really enjoyed was the year end, where they would have the predictions and the awards and all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, the very famous PWI Top 500. And I have Dan Murphy here, who's been with the magazine for 20 years or so.
22, yeah.
22 years. So I always love the whole concept of the Top 500. I think it's a great issue. I'm sure a lot of the boys probably look forward to reading it as much as the fans do as well. But I guess first and foremost, Dan, is you've been there pretty much since the list started. And how do you, I guess, come to putting together such a gargantuan task of finding 500 wrestlers around the world and then rating them from bottom to top?
Yeah, it's a challenge, and it's something that we don't take lightly, because it is something that means a lot. I mean, a lot of the people who are, you know, in the WWE or AEW or at the top level, they may or may not care too much about it, or at least, you know, they may not publicly admit that they do. But for a lot of the independent guys, I mean, we're at shows all the time, and, you know, I can't tell you how many times people have come over and said that they've been in the business for X number of years, and they would love just the acknowledgement of being in PWI, because like you, they grew up reading it and looking at the list. So we take that seriously, and what we try to do is we really try to look at a criteria that we have in place, and that basically we look at one loss record, technical ability, the overall impact on the sport, or influence on the sport, success against the highest quality of competition and the most diverse competition and activity. And we try to look at that criteria over a 12-month period of time and then begin the process of ranking everybody of where they were. So it's not entirely work rate. It's kind of title success. It's how big of a push you've gotten. It's how active you are on the independent level, how many companies you're working and where you're placed on the card. And we try to look at all of those things. It's a challenge, especially when you look at the international talent with everything going on in England and Europe now, plus Mexico and Japan and elsewhere. But we go piece by piece, put everybody together and work it through until we come up with our list.
And it's interesting, too, because we're talking about the whole concept of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And, you know, since its inception, it's really funny because, I mean, and I think we're all cool to say this at this point in time. Back in the day, it's a magazine. So you would have a lot of, you know, secret reporters. And, you know, when Apter was involved, even though his top 10 rankings, he would always call the different promotions and all that sort of stuff. But it's a magazine based around the entertainment form of wrestling. So it's not always completely 1,000%
I'm not going to say legit, but there's a lot of opinions and that sort of thing. But when you're doing this top 500, you really do put that much time into it. Like, we're even in, when you're going from like 300 to 500, you're still tabulating the wins and losses of, you know, Eddie Osborne from ECCW or something like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. It gives me nightmares. It literally does. because what we do is we'll tend to do a conference call. And since 91, when we started the 500 up until now, you can look at how wrestling has changed. Right. Kayfabe was still very heavy, obviously, in 91. You had the rise of WCW and ECW and the fall and everything that's happened since then. And the internet. And the business has just really kind of changed. I remember in that first list when it came out, coming up with 500 guys was a challenge. Right. I think Mr. Fuji made the list because he was doing some manager battle royals. Now we have so many people to choose from. And it makes a difference. It really means a lot to a lot of those guys. So we really try to look at everything throughout the year. Every independent show I go to, I keep notes. Anytime that I watch a show online or get a clip or anything else, I keep notes. And now with YouTube being as popular and the internet as ubiquitous as it is, I make it an effort to try to watch the matches of everyone who's on the list, plus the other 200-300 people that we consider that didn't make the list. You know, you can only do so much, but we really try to stay on it because it is meaningful for the people who are involved with it. We do our best with it.
So where do you even start? Like I said, if we're going by this year's list, for example, and I'm just kind of looking through everything here. I think this year Seth Rollins is number one. Spoiler alert, yes. But he's number one. So yes. Where do you, I guess, how do you start? Because like you mentioned, like in this day and age, there's so many more wrestlers. Like if I'm going through, like 419 is Crazy Steve and 420 is Cheeseburger. Like these are guys that I know and they've been around for a while. Luchasaurus is 434. It seems like 5 or 6 years ago, you would be just barely scraping the surface and putting Luchasaurus at like 200 because he works for a major company. But now there's so many more wrestlers out there. It seems like you don't just have to try and scrape together 500. There's probably way more than 500.
Yeah, the magazine has about a 2-month lead time, basically. So what we do to combat that, you know, from when we do the list and write it, it's about 2 months until it actually comes out in print. So we look at a 12-month evaluation period. And this month, it was July 1st, 2018, up until June 30th, 2019. That's the main thing that we looked at for ranking everyone. So a guy like Luchasaurus, AEW only ran one or maybe two events within that window. I'm sure that he's going to be in the top 200 next year. It's just that he only had that much activity on the national stage during that time period.
Right.
But yeah, there's definitely that's a challenge that we have because there's so many people out there. A guy like Crazy Steve, great talent. I've known him since he was a rookie up in Ontario. It's just that he's taken a step back from the national stage. He's still doing really well in the Tennessee Independence, but he's kind of dialed back the activity and the prominence. So his rating reflects that more so than any change in his in-ring ability.
Well, I guess, like you said, the more exposure you get, the higher up you're going to be just because you're on TV every week. And obviously those matches mean more because you are on, you know, on national television.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a sliding scale. It's a tough thing to really kind of wrap your head around. I mean, if you imagine doing a ranking of the best actors in the world, and then you begin to look at it, well, are you looking at Broadway actors? Are you looking at TV or movie? Are you looking at drama or comedy? I mean, because you get a Will Ferrell who's very different than a Daniel Day-Lewis, but they're both actors. And wrestling is the same type of thing. Everybody has a different type of role, and we try to use the criteria we have to get everybody on the list as reflective of their past 12 months as possible.
And it's funny, you mentioned, and we'll talk about this in a second, in the top 10, I'm looking at them right now, it's Will Ospreay is number 10. Tana's number nine, Tanahashi, and then you have number eight is Kenny Omega, and number seven is Roman Reigns, and number six is Johnny Gargano, number five is Okada, Kazuchika Okada, four is Kofi, three is AJ, two is Daniel Bryan, and number one is Seth Rollins. And I will say this, even though I'm not in this year's PWI 500, two of the top 10 guys in Okada and Kenny have full page pictures of them beating me up. So
Yeah, so you're definitely represented, if not ranked. Yeah.
But you're saying, for me, you've mentioned this, that I'm not ranked this year due to the activity requirement, at least 20 matches during the evaluation period, which was from July to the end of June, or at least one match in seven separate months. What made you decide to have that category, shall we speak?
Well, it was a couple things. On one hand, you had a lot of the guys like Triple H and Undertaker and later Goldberg and guys who were coming back and just kind of jumping into main programs, but only doing a handful of matches. And do we rank them, you know, say they're presented really high on the card, but they've only had a few matches. Is it right to put Triple H in at number 52 because he's only had X number of matches and he may have won half of them or whatever the case may be? Or is it better just to not have him in and save that spot for somebody who's been more active? The 7 months thing was kind of more for the independent guys. If somebody is a good star in a regional promotion and they're the top guy there who's beating people who are coming in, but the company only runs once every month, you know, the person only has 12, 15 matches, but they're the top guy in a small territory that's beating some names. We didn't want to disqualify them on the activity, especially if somebody on the undercard of that same show has wrestled 40 or 50 matches, but they're at the bottom of the card. So we just kind of came up with that is kind of a solution for the time being.
Okay, gotcha. So my highest PW 500 ranking was number 2 in 2009, and I've made the top 10 on 8 occasions. That's not bad.
No, not at all. And you made the top 10 8 times so far.
That's, you know, insane, and I
wouldn't rule you out.
I remember the first time I made the top 10. Because like you said, the guys do follow this, even though, you know, it's your opinions and all that sort of stuff. But I think I found a website that says it. In 1998, I was number 10. I dropped a bit in 99 to 29. Then 2000, I was 9. 2001, I was 9. 2002, I was 4. 2003, I was 5. 2004, I was 10. Then a big jump, 2009, all the way to number 2. I made it to number 2 that year. I wonder who was number 1 when I was number 2.
I don't have that in front of me.
But I mean, it's fun to always. Oh, it's Triple H, of course. That son of a bitch. Because I remember it was a big deal in 98, because I think Dean Malenko was number 1 or 99 or something along those lines.
And, yeah.
You know, for a guy like Dean to get voted in at that level was very cool.
It was very cool, and I liked it because I was a Malenko fan. At that point, I had just started with the magazine, and I was writing a lot of the bios, but not on the committee that did the ranking. And that was a year – it was a weird year because a lot of the top guys were injured for a significant portion of the year, and no one really stood out as a consensus. And for whatever reason, right or wrong, the editorial team decided, you know, let's go to the guy who's been consistently the best in-ring performer, and they went with Dean Malenko. The problem with that is – Misawa probably should have been the guy that year. I think he was number 2 behind Malenko. And I know at one point there was some, you know, there was fear because should we put a Japanese guy on the cover of PWI? Our readers don't know who these guys are. Will the issue sell? Mm-hmm. In fact, the first Japanese star that we had as number 1 was just a couple years ago when Okada was number 1. He kind of broke through. So you look at guys like Misawa who for all of their career, how great they were, they made the top 10, Misawa at number 1. We never had Tanahashi at number 1. That's changed a little bit now. Japan is definitely more prevalent, and our fans are more aware of it through Access and the internet. But yeah, that year they went with Dean Malenko as the top guy. And to this day, I think it kind of muddies the water because people think of the list as being based on work rate because that year Dean made it based on work rate. But that's only just one of maybe 7 or 8 pieces of criteria that we look at.
Well, I think, too, like you mentioned, I mean, and I want to talk about this, too, how what the readership is of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, how much it's changed, because now it seems like the readers that are still buying the magazine would be the hardcore fans, just due to the fact that there's so much information available on a daily basis just at your fingertips. It must be kind of harder and harder to be able to put out a magazine that people are going to want to buy.
Yeah, so there's definitely the internet wrestling fans that are out there, and we're aware of that, and they're sophisticated. But I like to remember myself, and maybe you were the same way. You talked about subscribing when you were younger. I remember being 10, 12 years old and going grocery shopping with my mom, and she would just kind of leave me at the magazine section, and she'd go shopping. And I'd sit there cross-legged on the floor reading the wrestling magazines and the comic books until she was done and came back to get me. So I'd like to, I know that, that those readers are still out there, the fans who just like to follow their favorites, the Roman Reigns, the Braun Strowmans, and everything else. So our challenge with PWI is to try to reach out to all of those audiences and try to give everybody something and make them keep coming back to the magazine.
Have you guys kind of done more from a digital standpoint, try and combat? Because I know the publishing business as a whole is basically gone down so much over the years. Is that something that you try and do more online presence and online releases, shall we say?
To a degree, yeah. The problem with that is, you know, our model is based in print, and you don't want to give away everything for free, and then people stop buying the print. So we unleashed or unveiled the digital version of PWI, which is basically the magazine that you can download. It comes out a little bit early. You can have it on your phone or your tablet or whatever device. And to make it a little bit kind of cooler, as you flip through the digital edition, in addition to getting it sooner, there are links. So in the 500, certain wrestlers have clicked links to a YouTube match. So as you go through that 500, I mean, I remember again when I was a kid, I'd go through the 500 and I'd look at all the guys who I hadn't seen before who looked interesting and circle them. And it's like, I want to try to watch this guy. I want to keep my eye open for this guy. Now with the digital edition, there's a link right there. You can just click and go right to YouTube and see it all in kind of one interface.
I remember there was a guy that used to come to Rhode Island, the Coliseum, I think it's called Dunkin' Donuts Arena, whatever it's called. He was called Alfredo the Danger Boy. And he had a jacket, like it was like a Letterman jacket. And on it, he had like 1995, number 458. 1996, 453. Like he had his whole listing of whatever, wherever he was listed in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Top 500 printed out and put on a jacket to kind of show how well he had done over the years and how he had raised his status in the top 500. Did you see a lot of that, of the guys getting really into it, especially more of the lower level guys?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It still happens. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Timmy Lou Retton was number 500 a couple of years ago, and he got either a belt made or something that was Mr. 500, and he had that. And Latin heartthrob Gino, down one of Booker T's students, he made a big thing about his number, and it was the number of, you know, 417 section or something, whatever it was. So yeah, guys still kind of use it as a gimmick where they can. You know, it's still, for a lot of people, it's just an honor to be included. But then you will find, I mean, I've had big name guys who have been on WWE pay-per-views, you know, who will kind of bump into me at a show and really give me serious heat, where they're not just goofing around, but they're like, oh, how come I dropped 30 spots? I have this, I did this, I did this. You know, they're really kind of ticked about it. I had, and he probably wouldn't mind me saying it, but when we do the PWI report cards, one year I gave, we gave Christopher Daniels, I think, a B-, and he was heated about it, you know. And it's like, well, it's based on what you've achieved and whatever, you know, whatever. But yeah, some guys take it really seriously, and that's good, and we do too. So we appreciate that.
No, but like I mean, like I said, because I think when you are, you know, in that world, like obviously for me, like, and this is not a bad thing, you can understand this, like I really don't care if I was number 500 or number 2 or number 1 or whatever it may be. You know, it is what it is. But when you first start, like I said, to get that, I remember the first time I was ever listed in the rankings WCW or ECW, whatever it was, in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, I was so excited, like, oh my gosh, like I'm number 9 overall in ECW, you know, because you grow up reading those things and, you know, taking them as gospel. So when you're actually included in it, it is a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I grew up reading the same thing, and that's why we try to, you know, do our best with it. I mean, tomorrow, you know, the day after we're taping this on Thursday, the PWI 500 comes out, and I have heartburn the entire day, like the next couple days, because now it's out there, and we're writing all these bios, and we're trying to beat a deadline and get everything in there, and I'm always terrified that there's some mistake. You know, and it, because even at a small level, a wrong title in somebody's bio in the 400s, because for them it is a big deal. And if we get the name of their finishing move wrong or something along those lines. Like, you know, we hate doing that because it's a big deal for them and we don't want to have any errors. So I always just kind of scan the internet, scan social media, see what people are saying. And, you know, hopefully it goes pretty well.
And dude, it's like you said, I mean, fans probably won't notice, but you're dealing with a very sensitive group of individuals in pro wrestlers, right? Like, if you write something wrong, no one might ever notice it except for the guy who you wrote it about, and that guy would be furious at you for getting it
wrong. You know, I had somebody, you know, say to me, well, I haven't used the Shining Wizard in 4 years, and you have it as one of my signature moves. Come on, man.
By the way, I did a little research. In 1999, Danger Boy Alfredo was 382. He had a big drop in 2000. He went down to 419, so I'm sure Danger Boy wasn't too happy about that.
Yeah, 1 year the guys will be your best friends. You know, they'll want to buy you a beer, and then they have that big drop, and all of a sudden they're just slamming you on Twitter. Right. It happens every year.
So you weren't involved in 91, but I'm just going to go through the top 10 for the very first PWI 500. Let's see how the business has changed. Number one is Hogan, Luger, Flair, Savage, Sting, Rick Steiner, Steamboat, Steve Williams, Arn, and Rick Steiner. There's your top 10. So of course,
wait, you said Rick Steiner twice.
Oh, sorry. Scott Steiner was 6. Rick Steiner was 10.
Yeah. So the Steiners and Arn in the top 10 are a little bit surprising in retrospect, but all the rest, I mean, those are, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame guys.
That's the king of, yeah, the kings of 1991. And obviously it would seem to me back in those days that Hogan would have been a put Hogan on the cover, and you're pretty much guaranteed some sales.
Yeah. Hogan, well, 91 was a little bit down, but yeah, I think so. I mean, for the 80s, it was always Hogan and Flair. I mean, those were the twin towers, so to speak, of the PWI covers.
Who were the guys in the 90s that were the big sellers, if you put them on the cover?
The 90s big sellers, Undertaker was big, obviously Stone Cold and The Rock. Triple H and you those are the guys that come to mind right away.
Really?
Yeah,
there was quite a few Jericho Pro Wrestling Illustrated covers, so I guess that explains it.
Yeah, and at that time, especially during the 90s, we had, you know, Pro Wrestling Illustrated. You mentioned Wrestling Superstars in the beginning, but we had Inside Wrestling and The Wrestler. Before that, we had Sports Review, and we had the annuals. So we had 5 or 6 different titles of the magazines. PWI is the last one standing. And that's really because of the 500, in large part, is that's really kind of kept us going.
Really? So this is one of your big moments of the year that keeps you rolling?
Yeah, the last 3 or 4 years, the 500 has actually sold out. So it's our biggest issue by far.
Really?
And it really kind of keeps us going, yeah.
I remember I kept buying the prediction ones for years after I was even in the business, just out of habit. Just out of kind of maybe a little bit of loyalty, because I always really enjoyed, I would always get that one in my stocking at Christmas, and that'd be the first thing I would read. Yeah. is the Pro Wrestling Illustrated year-end awards and predictions, which were always great.
Yeah, the same way. It was, for me, it was never felt like Christmas or year-end until I had a chance to get that issue and go through all the matches of the year, the feud of the year, and the predictions for the coming year. So yeah, that's the same thing.
Let's go through a couple others. I always love the number 500. So 500 of 91 was Zeus. That's a pretty big name to put on last.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, well, again, in 91, he would have had, he might have been doing Puerto Rico at that time, because he would have done the No Holds Barred in 89 or 90, 89, I think, SummerSlam 89. So he might have been just doing a few little one-off spots on the Indies and then Puerto Rico.
Gotcha. But I want to do the just for people that let's just go through the number ones in the 500s every year. So the next year in 92, Sting was number one, which is very much expected. Another big name. And then number 500 at that point in time was the illustrious Morgus the Maniac. What do we know about Morgus?
Oh, man. I remember reading about Morgus at the time, but he was in the Northeast. I think maybe he was in the Philadelphia area. I can't remember exactly where he was located. But when we were doing the 500, especially for the first few years, and we still do this every once in a while, you know, the 500 spot is often a good spot to stick a good gimmick. You know, somebody who's just different, and, you know, somebody who's interesting to see. Because if you put that gimmick guy at number 490, then the 10 guys who come up behind him are like, oh, how come I'm behind the gimmick guy? You know, so 500 was a good spot to get somebody in there. And it's kind of changed a little bit, particularly this year. Our 500 this year is Corey Storm out of Ohio Valley Wrestling. because the thing is, there's so many qualified guys. You don't want to necessarily kind of burn a gimmick spot at the expense of taking off somebody else who really deserves to be in there. But I think Morgus is one of those guys, and you'll see a lot more as you kind of go through the years, as the number 500 as being somebody who had a unique and interesting gimmick, and it was just a good spot to fit him in there.
You know, it's one of those things too, like I said, like I would rather be 500 than like 467, because everybody's checking out who number 500 is.
Yeah. Yeah. I had Puff. He's a Western New York guy in Buffalo. Big guy. He's about 380 or so. Real fan favorite. Beat Joey Ryan a little while back, so he's facing some names. He was number 500, and Pepper Parks, Braxton Sutter, Pepper Parks. So he was kind of giving me grief about being 500, joking around. And Pepper was 500 a few years back and said the same thing. He goes, man, you got the second best ranking in the 500. I mean, everyone's going to look at number one and they look at number 500. So don't take that for granted. You know, you'd rather be 500 than the 399, believe me.
I think it was Billy Anderson maybe one year who was number 500. He was super excited about it.
Yeah, Billy, in fact, a few years back, I remember seeing Billy at the Cauliflower Alley Club, and he was selling copies of your book, which, you know, at his gimmick table. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And I'd asked him about it. He's like, oh, he mentioned me in it. And, you know, I just bought a bunch in bulk and I signed the page that he mentioned me. All right. Hey,
always be hustling, man. That's great.
Yeah, workers are going to work.
Hey, I totally approve that. No problem at all. yeah, so 93, Bret Hart, which would make perfect sense. And number 500 that year, Garbage Man.
Yeah, yeah. Which, again, a famous one. You know, the Garbage Man went on, you know, Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Oh, so that was actually Duke the Dumpster Drosy. He was wrestling as the Garbage Man before that?
Before he came to WWE, yeah. And jeez. I don't know the entire backstory on it, but I know that that's what got him national attention. And I don't know if that's what put him on WWE's radar or not. I mean, he obviously had the size and he had the gimmick in a time where they wanted gimmicks. Wow. But that was the first national attention. And the next thing you know, he, a year or two later, becomes Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Wow. See, I remember one time Taz was in the top 10. And he actually used that as a bargaining chip with Eric Bischoff. It's like, hey, you know, I'm ECW champion and I was top 10 in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. You know, listen, Taz is going to hear that, get mad at me. So that's the rumor that I heard. That's the rumor that I heard, was that Taz used that as a thing on his resume. PWI top 10 inductee.
And if it worked for him, I'm glad that we could help.
That's right. That's right. So 94, Bret Hart, he's in there again. Number one, two-time number one winner. Who's the guy that has the most number ones?
The most number ones is actually John Cena. He's the only guy who's done it three times.
Oh,
In 2006, 2007, and 2013. Seth, who got it this time, this is Seth Rollins' second time. There's a handful of guys who've gotten it twice, but Cena's the only guy who's gotten it three times.
Jeez, I never got it once, man. I feel slighted in my career now. This is a sad day for me.
You've got a new goal for 2020.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? When I won most hated wrestler of the year for PWI back in, I think, 98, there was no, you guys weren't giving out the plaques anymore. And I made Stu Sachs make me a plaque and send it to me because I always wanted one of those plaques.
You're not the only guy who's done that. Yeah. You know, so in fact, for a while with the number one or the number one, the Loons 100, periodically we'll make a plaque and, you know, we'll do a little presentation. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do that with Seth this year. We'll find out. But some of those guys really just want to have that plaque, especially for something like Most Hated.
Especially if you grew up reading it, because like I said, that would be, unwrap the magazine on Christmas morning and look through and see who won. So 94, Bret Hart's number one. Number 500. Oh, the illustrious Don E. Allen.
Yes.
You know what Don E. Allen's most known for to me?
What's that?
He played Peter Criss when Meanie and the BWO was doing the Kiss thing in ECW Arena. When the Kiss reunited, it was Blue Meanie was Gene Simmons, Stevie Richards was Paul Stanley, Supernova was Ace Frehley, and Don E. Allen was Peter Criss. And they came to the ring and lip-synced Rock and Roll Night until Sandman came down and caned them all.
Was Donnie chosen just because he, you know, like the Brady Bunch, because he fit the suit? Or, I mean, how did Donnie Allen
fit? Basically just fit the suit. Yeah, they needed a fourth guy, and he just probably, hey, put this Peter Criss makeup on. Or maybe he was a huge Kiss fan, or maybe, I don't know. All I know is that he's the illustrious Peter Chris. Okay, 95 is the Diesel in there. Diesel had a big year that year. And number 500 of that year was Kevin Kirby. Don't know who that is.
No, I can't remember Kevin Kirby myself. I'd have to go back and read his bio to find out a little bit more about him.
And I will say that Donnie Allen went from 500 to 499 that year. So he that must have been when he was Peter Chris. He had a little bit more steam there.
He got the bump.
I got the bump. All right, 96, and this is almost to your era. 96 is Shawn Michaels. Finally, Shawn Michaels is number one. Much deserved, I would say, for that time period.
Oh, yeah, that was the year of the Iron Man match, I believe, against Bret. You know, and anyone who wins at WrestleMania, you know, the winner of the main event of WrestleMania is kind of the guy to beat. That's the front runner, because if you can headline the biggest stage in the U.S. like that, you know, you're going to be definitely in consideration. And you look at the work Shawn was doing at that time as WWE was going through its new era of you know, smaller guys. And he was perfectly indicative. He was the right guy at the right time.
Right, right. And the right guy for the right time for number 500, Baby Huey.
Yeah. Yeah, Baby Huey might have been in ICW at the time. Again, I think he was another Northeast independent guy, but another case of a guy with a great gimmick. And we like getting the gimmick spotlighted in there.
That's it, like you said, yeah. Just a little trivia note, 499 was Jake Steele, who actually trained in Calgary in, I believe, 1992. He was in the same class as PJ, what's his name, Justin Credible. And Rebel Starbuck from Finland. They were all in the same class with Jake Steele.
Very cool.
And also, too, another trivia note, Donnie Allen moved up to 498 that year. So he was really on a roll. Slowly but surely making his way to number one.
You know, in another 500 years, he'd be up there.
All right, now we start the Dan Murphy era. Do you remember who the first number one was when you came in?
Would this be 97? 98 would have been Dean, so I'm not sure who 97
was. 97 was Dean, so this was Dean's year.
Oh, okay, so it was a Dean, okay.
Yeah, and that, once again, you think about that. He went from 13 up to number one, beating Steve Austin, and I bet you Diamond Dallas Page wasn't happy about that Dean beat him. Page was number four that year. And we go to number 500, who was Joe Rules.
Yeah,
I don't know who that is.
Joe Rules. Yeah, he was. He might have been one of Jim Kettner's guys. Again, a lot of these, and this is the case where this is, again, you know, the internet existed in '97, but it wasn't what it is today.
Right.
Obviously, there was no YouTube or anything like that. So to fill out the list, a lot of things, we were still getting a lot of submissions where people would send us packets, publicity packets, videotapes,
really,
else we'd get in the mail. Oh yeah, yeah, big bundles of them. And we'd have to weed through it. And Brandy Mankiewicz was one of the editors who kind of did that for several years. And I remember one of the big challenges she had was that was the era of a lot of backyard wrestling. And people were just gimmicking, working their credentials, their titles, naming companies that never existed, sending in results. And she had to kind of weed through and determine what was legit, what wasn't. And then you had guys who were, you know, I mean, not them specifically, but you had guys like the Hardys and Shannon Moore and everything else who were doing backyard, but they were also, you know, in other promotions. So you'd get these submissions from people and say, well, what's real and what's not real? It was just a really weird time for wrestling. But I think that there might have been a little bit of a bias in our office, because the office is based in the Philadelphia area, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of independence there. So they got to see those guys more often. So I think that Kettner in Delaware with ECWA and some of those other companies got represented pretty well just because of the geographic proximity to the headquarters.
But I mean, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's why I always tell people when they're working, even to this day, like, oh, I live in Louisville, or I live in Vancouver, or I live in, you know, Texas. Like, you guys need to move to the Northeast, you know, New York, Philly, Delaware, Connecticut, all that area is where so much of the independent wrestling is still based to this day. And you'll get more work and more exposure if you're in that, you know, New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut area.
Yeah, it definitely helps in terms of exposure, because, you know, more eyes are on the cards and being networking, you get more booking. So yeah, absolutely.
1998, no surprise. Number one is Steve Austin, of course. Little side note, hot young upstart Chris Jericho, number 10. That was my first top 10 appearance.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Welcome to the 500 top 10.
Yeah, it was a big deal for me. And number 500, Chip Fairway. OK,
kind of, he was the he did the golf gimmick.
God, but I hope so.
Yeah.
We go to 1999. Here's where Taz was number 10. I think this is where Taz used the fact he was a top 10 PWI performer. And number one that year, for the second year in a row, Steve Austin. No surprise.
Yep.
It was a big year for Steve. Probably his last really big year. And number 500 from the United States of America, Vincent Goodnight. Do we know who that is?
Yeah. I can't remember much about Vincent Goodnight.
So that's right. I just Googled him. Good-looking kid, but... never really heard of him. Seemed like he did a couple matches for WWE, like Jacked and Sunday Night Heat from Lincoln, Nebraska, is where Vincent Goodnight is from. So, Vincent, if you're listening,
now, I know that we have a
shout out to you.
Yeah, we have a Mikey Every Night who made the list this year. So ooh, maybe Mikey Every Night, Vincent Goodnight, you know, have met at some point.
Maybe cousins.
Yeah.
Triple H, number one for 2000. Hot young upstart Chris Jericho moves up to number nine. So, a little bit. Wait, is that where we are? Yeah, 2000. Oh, yeah. So I missed the top 10 in 99. I dropped and I went back up to number nine in 2000. So in that year, number 500 was the California Kid. Not sure. Maybe he's related to the Colorado Kid. I don't know.
Former NWA champion. Yeah, the Colorado Kid. Again, cousins. Maybe.
Mike Rapata. I remember that name.
Yeah.
2001, Kurt Angle makes his way in to number one. Jericho stays at
Angle
number
knocked nine. Off. You were in number nine again, right behind Misawa. Mm-hmm. And that's again one of those years where we had some of these incredible Japanese guys in the top 10, but just never at the number one spot. Angle at one, Stone Cold two, then Benoit. Then you have Muto, number eight, you have Misawa, then you. It was a really kind of diverse year back then.
Are you following really along? Cool. Did you find the website with all the top?
No, this is from memory at this point.
Oh, jeez. That was really good, man.
No, I'm cheating at this point. I pulled up a little bit of a list here.
That's all right.
But yeah, it's cool because you can have the WCW had just kind of ended, but you still had all that WCW talent, WWE talent, and all the international talent. You're really seeing a lot going on right there.
This is cool for me too. Lance Storm at number 13, Chris Jericho at number nine, two skids from Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling Camp, graduating class 1990, making it into the top 13 of the Pro Wrestling Illustrated top 500. That's a pretty good little story there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And our former boss, Genshiro Tenryu, is number 12. So number 500 that year is Pepper Parks.
Yes. Pepper Parks went on to be Braxton Sutter in Impact a couple of years ago. He's still very active. But at that time, it would have been before he started up with Les Thatcher, I think. But he was doing a male cheerleader gimmick. And he had his hair, he had long hair, he had it up in ponytails. It's all, he looks like Jason Statham now. He looks like a Jack Jason Statham. But he had this long flowing hair and these ponytails. And he was doing really well with the gimmick. And then a couple of years later, all of a sudden the Spirit Squad came out and basically just stole his gimmick blind, and he had to kind of reinvent himself.
And like you said, now reinvent himself again. What's his name now? Braxton
still,
Sutter?
He was Braxton Sutter in Impact, but then left Impact and went back to Pepper Parts.
Gotcha. Okay. Number one in 2002 is RVD. Chris Jericho up to number four, my highest ranking as to date. Number 500, Derek McQuinn. Don't know much about Derek.
Yeah, I don't remember Derek at all.
2003, Brock Lesnar comes in, much deserved, I'd say. And Jericho falls down to number five. And Billy Kay is number 500. No need for a last name, just Billy Kay.
It wouldn't have to be confused with one of the Iconics right now, Billy Kay with Peyton Royce. But different Billy Kay.
You sure it's not the same? Well, let's talk a little bit about the women's 500 because... the women's 100, because I know that's something that's fairly recent. But once again, with the advent of women's wrestling and so many, between WWE and AEW and Impact, and then you've got Shimmer and Stardom and all this sort of stuff, it must be very easy to come up with 100 worthy women for this list as well.
Yeah, we started that up about 12 years ago, I think now. It was the female 50 originally. And at that time, it was tough really coming up with 50, because we looked at 50 in North America and just the U.S. and Canada, honestly, because the Lucha style was so different and what they were doing in Japan was so different than what WWE and Impact were doing. But I was a big proponent of it. I pushed for it for a little while before we finally got it up and running. And last year, we expanded it from 50 to 100 and opened it up internationally. I co-wrote a book, Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, A History of Women's Pro Wrestling. So I was really active going out to Shimmer a couple times a year and watching Shine shows. And I know that entire crew and very kind of on top of everything that's happening. But got together and watched what was happening in the independents, plus in WWE and NXT with Shayna Baszler and everything, and then in Stardom over in Japan. And it's really been great. It's been, you know, you come up with that 100 people, and there's still another 40 or 50 that you look at and say, oh, my God, I can't believe that she's not on the list, but there's no one I can bump out to make room for her. You know, that's the list.
And who was,
so it's really
who was
great that women's...
Who was number one most recently?
Last year's number one was Ronda Rousey. Gotcha. Again, controversial in that she was a rookie and, you know, she was still new, but she was undefeated. She headlined WrestleMania and everything else. I mean, she was our number one. And the year before that, it was Asuka.
Yeah, obviously, too, she deserves it. If you're talking about, you know, the biggest names in the business, Ronda's definitely one of them, as a rookie or not, for sure.
Yeah.
2004, Benoit is number one and Eddie is number two. A little bit of a poetic kind of a sad thing there. And number 500 is Rod Steele. Sounds like a porn star.
Yeah. Right. I believe that was Rod Steele, who was in OVW at the time. Yeah, it was. He was doing quite a bit. I think he might have did some training at the OVW school for a little while. I know he was really well-respected. He was an older guy. But yeah, he was an interesting character.
Let me ask you a question. If you talk about Chris and Eddie, and obviously their passings were both very different, but both very untimely. How did you handle not just their deaths, but all deaths in Pro Wrestling Illustrated? Did you write about them like
I started?
Did you write about them like they
were
legit news type of thing? Or?
We did. Yeah. When I started with PWI, Brandy and Kevin said to me, working for PWI is basically half Marvel Comics and half straight journalism.
Right.
Because we're writing kayfabe and you're writing about superheroes, these characters. But at times, real life intrudes on that. You have to be factual and realistic in your reporting. For a lot of us, you know, writing about the Von Erichs and everything that happened with them was something. I remember when the Junkyard Dog died, doing his obituary and others. As the magazine continued to kind of evolve and wrestling itself evolved, getting a little bit away from kayfabe and a little bit more into reality, PWI had to too. Mm-hmm. So by this time, we were doing a lot more shoot interviews, a lot more legitimate backstage reporting without being kind of a dirt sheet. You know, we want to kind of keep some things behind the curtain, you know. But in those cases, we had to report on it and did some really strong, you know, reporting about everything that happened. And what came out with both Chris and Eddie.
I remember one time, because like you said, it was half Marvel Comics, half shoot. But a lot of times, you know, the interviews that were in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated might not be 100%, you know, sitting down talking with the guys like they are now. And I remember one time I got sued by Larry Zbysko for I had a T-shirt and I was calling myself the Living Legend, and I had to go.
I got a call from our publisher because we were working some of the interviews back then.
Right.
And Stu Sachs has kind of admitted it. And, you know, as long as we stayed within the frames of the storylines, everything was fine. And you were calling yourself the Living Legend. I remember I had to work an interview with you at some point in 97 or 98. And I had you say that. And apparently when you got sued, Larry Zbysko used that as evidence. And they contacted me. It's like, yeah, you know, you might get subpoenaed on this.
How ridiculous, so right?
I mean, obviously it never came to that, but yeah, just you were always great when I had to do the worked interviews because I really liked your early interview style and I felt like I can write this stuff. I get preserved, I get the character. And I guess I got it so well that Zbysko thought it was legit and was going to subpoena me.
When I sat down for the deposition and the lawyers, because they don't know any better, right? They're like, and in this issue of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, I'm like, what? You can't use that as evidence? That's not real.
it was a different time.
It was. 2005, Big Dave Batista is number one, which is really cool. And number 500, Nick Nemeth.
Yes.
Now known as Nick Nemeth Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, he was, again, doing really well down in Ohio Valley Wrestling. He was definitely one to watch. And he was one of those guys that we knew was going to have, you know, was going to do well. I think Cornette was still there in 2000. I'm pretty sure Cornette was still there. But I remember talking to, you know, Cornette and Danny Davis and everything else, like, who are the guys to watch? And Nick was definitely one. So he was, that's how he got that spot.
That might be the highest 500 to superstar ever.
Definitely at that point, at this point, yeah, there, I think it might be. Yeah. I don't think we've ever had another 500 who went on to a world title in WWE.
2000. Well, Dolph did have the world title briefly, didn't he? Beat or Del Rio for it, so he actually was the champion at one point. So there you go, 500 yeah. to world yeah. champion. 2006 was the Cena's first number one, and number 500, Mike Page, not as successful as Nick Nemeth.
No, he's no Dolph Ziggler.
And might I just add that the Donnie Allen era seems to be over.
Yeah, once ECW folded, I think that was the end of Donnie.
Yeah, Donnie, yeah. I wonder what the E stands for. John Cena, 2007, like you mentioned, and number 500 that year. Andre Hart.
Nope, I can't recall.
And 499 was Vincent Nothing, which maybe was Vincent Goodnight's new gimmick, maybe. I don't know.
You got to reinvent yourself every once in a while. You do. You know that.
This Goodnight thing isn't happening. I'm just going to change my name to Nothing. Vincent Nothing. 2008 was Randy Orton, a big year for Randy, which it's crazy to believe Randy's been on top for so long. You forget about how long he's been there and how long he's been so good.
Yeah, I was just going to say with Randy, you see him, you know, in action now, and you look back, at, you know, where he was in 2006, 7, 8, 9, he still looks the same. I mean, he was, yeah, he maybe he looked a little facially younger, but his ring presence, his style, he's just ageless, and he's still amazing.
Here's a top 10 for the bottom 500. I'm going to read it to you. Number 500, Kurt Adonis, but that's not why I'm reading it. Here we go. Cliffhanger, 499. The guy with red hair, 498. Worker Ant, 497. Super Callow, 493. Larry Zbysko, 492. And 491, I got a brewski.
Yeah, it was definitely an era of a lot of gimmicks back then. But I wonder how Zbysko felt about being, you know, one behind I Got a Brewski. But, you know.
Sandwiched between Super Callow and I Got a Brewski. By the way, that's spelled I-G-O-T-T-A Brewski. Maybe he's Russian. I'm not sure. Polish, maybe?
Yeah, Polish. It was a Polish gimmick.
I like the guy with the red hair, too. As we move forward here, 2009 is Triple H. Number two, Chris Jericho. I couldn't get past that Triple H no matter what.
No matter what. He was always there. He always had the shovel, yeah. You know? He was there.
I did go up 27. I think originally I was supposed to be number one, but then you got a call from Connecticut, and that changed very quickly. Number 500?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Right. Number 500, Shockwave the Robot.
Yes. Shockwave, based in central New York. If you've ever seen him, he does, you know, he's got this whole suit that he made. It's a robot. Takes off most of the kind of hard plastic stuff and does kind of a breakdancing robot thing. But he has a little control pad, or he used to have a control pad on his arm. And if he hit that, it would program him to be an incredible wrestler. So he'd come out all clunky like a robot and whatever, and then hit this button. And then all of a sudden he's doing these Greco-Roman takedowns and fluid, and everything looked good. And then eventually a wrestler would grab it, hit the control panel, and he'd lock up, and, you know, that's a fun little gimmick.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. It's like kind of a modern day Max Moon.
Very similar. Yeah.
2010, AJ Styles. Wow. Almost 10 years ago, AJ was number one. Another guy who's been there for so long. He's been so good.
He was the only guy from Impact Wrestling who ever got the top spot. You know, if you look at everybody here, it was everyone in WWE for a solid 15 years or so. But that was the one year that AJ beat out John Cena and got the top spot.
Wow, there you go. All right. Barry Wolf, number 500. Very average name. Definitely not a guy with red hair on that one. Oh, my goodness. Really? 2011, number one. Do you know who it is?
I do.
Say it.
It was The Miz. Yeah.
That's controversial. What was the mindset for that?
With that, I remember this specifically. I mean, he went into WrestleMania as a champion, and he retained the title against John Cena at WrestleMania. and our and everybody else had kind of a bad year. He beat out Randy Orton. He beat out Cena. Number four that year was Kane and Del Rio. Like, Mr. Anderson made the top 10. Like, it just didn't have that kind of superstar top 10 that we'd had in previous years.
You're right, yeah.
And I remember driving down to Philly. It's before we did kind of a conference call to really talk about the what we'll do is we'll have some of the writers and we'll do a few hour conference call to go over the top maybe 75 or so. And then they give it over to me and I handle the rest of the list and send it to the group and we make some adjustments and discuss. But that year I was driving down to Philly and the whole drive down, I was trying to think, I can't in good conscience go with The Miz. It's got to be somebody else. But for a 7-hour drive from Buffalo, New York, down to Philadelphia, I couldn't think of anyone else. And we got into the building, and we all kind of looked at each other, and went, we're going with The Miz number one, aren't we? Yeah, I guess we are. Wow. That year, during that evaluation period, because at that time, he was on SmackDown, he was on Raw with the brand split, he was on NXT, I think he was mentoring Daniel Bryan at the time, he was all over the programming, had the world title, I think he had the IC title, there was just no one else who could touch his year.
So The Miz has been number one and I haven't. My goodness.
True.
I'm going to have to deal with that next time I see him. 2012 is CM Punk at number one. That was a big year for him. And 500, Brian Hardy, no relation, I'm assuming.
No relation, but he is a second generation wrestler. His father, I'm blanking on his name right now. But he was in the Barry Hardy. Used to team with Dwayne Gill in WWE, gotcha. Kind of enhancement matches. And Brian was just kind of working with his dad and doing a father-son tag team gimmick at the time.
And can I say that The Miz dropped from number one to number 49? That's got to be one of the biggest drops ever to show that he was a one-trick pony that year.
He was.
2013, return of Cena to the top position, kind of Arnold returning to Mr. Olympia. He wins 5 or 6 years after the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, very similar, I guess.
Number 500, Lucifer Lords. I like that name. Lucifer. I wonder where Lucifer Lords is nowadays.
Yeah, I don't know where he ended up, but he had the whole heaven and hell type gimmick going on. So.
All right. 2014, Daniel Bryan at number one, which he had a big year. That's when the big Yes Movement started. And at number 500, my close personal friend, Grado.
Yes. Grado was one that I had really kind of seen. This is before he got to Impact. So I was seeing some kind of viral videos going on of just, you know, him coming out doing his entrance to like a prayer and everything else in ICW, I think, over in Scotland. And it kind of turned me on. I'm like, to see more about this guy. So I started watching his stuff and he was doing mostly comedy stuff, but he was solid for what, you know, he was doing. So I thought he was a guy that really kind of needed or would fit well in that spot. And that's how Grado got it.
Yeah, Grado is a very entertaining performer. 2015, Seth Rollins was number one, his first exposure at number one there. And 500 is the Space Monkey.
Yes, out of Ontario. Another, again, a gimmick, but great wrestler. He does this thing where he was... He was a monkey who was shot into space, came back with incredible wrestling abilities. And he's really, really good gymnastically. So he has a great gimmick, but he can actually go too.
Well, I hope he's good gymnastically if he's a monkey from space. I mean, there's no gravity and he's got the gymnastics things going on. So shout out to the Space Monkey. Let's just see. We get to the Norris, the end. Roman Reigns in 2016 with Okada number two. Was that a little bit of a discussion as to who goes at number one, or was it Reigns' year? No problem.
That one was Reigns' year. Okada was definitely there on the cusp, but Reigns had a fantastic year. And even though when we called him to tell him that he was number one, he kind of laughed and says, you're going to have a lot of people hating you. So, yeah, we're aware because, the backlash is definitely on. Which actually is something that Seth Rollins said to us this year, which is kind of surprising. Seth was kind of the internet darling a couple of years ago. And this year, he was kind of saying, you guys might, take a little bit of heat over this. But but Roman Reigns was the clear pick in 2016, in 2017.
Do you call the number ones every year and let them know?
We typically do. Yeah. Well, if it's a WWE guy, we coordinate it with WWE, but we give him a quick heads up, talk to him a little bit, get some quotes for the magazine, whatever possible.
Gotcha. Number 500 that year, Timmy Lou Retton.
Yes. And he's the one that mentioned he was doing a he was an illegitimate son of Mary Lou Retton, and he does the whole gymnast thing and the ribbon thing. He did a gimmick where I think he had a 500 title belt or something that his local promotion had for him.
Hey, you know what? You got to give credit to these guys for coming up with these gimmicks, man. It's like everyone's giving Orange Cassidy crap, and I'm like, well, at least it's something different. Everyone knows who he is. Whether you like it or don't like it, you're standing out and getting people to talk about you, and that's the most important thing about what wrestling is all about.
Absolutely.
2017, Okada, number one, and number 500.
Yep, our first.
Well, let's talk about this. Is that the first ever non-North American winner?
That's right. Yeah, the first one from Japan or from outside of North America. And again, there was a debate about whether or not, is it going to sell? Is the magazine going to sell if we have somebody who's not a WWE guy on the cover? And it sold. I mean, we sold out. So, we're very happy. And that really kind of let us know that our readers do appreciate New Japan and everything that's going on internationally. And he was definitely a deserving candidate. So we're very happy that we were able to get him.
Like I said, that doesn't surprise me considering that, your fan base, like we mentioned, is probably a very hardcore one at this point anyways, just to be buying magazines alone, because magazines are so much very archaic almost in a lot of ways. Same thing with Rolling Stone magazine or, Billboard magazine or anything like that.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's been a, it's the high point is past, but we're still soldiering on.
Daniel Richards, number 500 there. Don't know much about Daniel. And we go to 2018. Last year, number one was, do you know who it was?
Kenny Omega.
Of course. I was going to guess that before I even clicked on it. I think Okada and Omega are probably the best two wrestlers in the world to a certain point over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that year we actually had AJ Styles kind of penciled in at the top spot. But Okada Omega won the title, I think, at Dominion. He won it right at the end of the evaluation period.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, now he finally won it. We got to go with him. So we did kind of flip and went with Omega at number one.
Number 500, Puff with one F.
Yes.
Puff.
Yep, Puff from Western New York. He's a good guy, entertaining guy.
496, Steve Rivers, a guy I used to wrestle with back in Calgary in the early 90s. So Steve is out there still working. Always good to see the brothers still making a living out there. And then that takes us to this year, where number one, like we said, is Seth Rollins, which is his second year at number one. And we go to the number 500, Corey Storm.
Corey Storm, Category 5 Storm, from Ohio Valley Wrestling. Again, not so much a gimmick, just a talented wrestler who has a lot of potential and had a particularly good year.
He's been on a tear in Ohio Valley Wrestling. He won the 2019 Midsummer Nightmare Tournament and the NWP Smitty Werben Jaggerman Jensen Tournament this summer. That's not real.
It's funny because I've got a word count for each of those bios. And when you can get a tournament name like that, it makes it a lot easier to write. You know, that accounts for about 7 words right there.
Perfect. So as we wind down here, Dan, once again, this has just been a lot of fun to go through all this. And how long does it take for you to put together the list and write all the bios? How many people are working on this? Because as you mentioned, this is the big project for the year for Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Yeah, we do the ranking. We do a conference call or a in-person meeting, and we go through as many as we can over a maybe 4-hour span. Maybe it's 70 to 80 or so. We kind of get burnt out. That's when we start looking at like tag teams in WWE and say, well, which of the Primo or Epico, which is higher, And then we go through and say, well, which one normally scores the pinfalls and, things like that, but trying to determine where everybody should be. And then after that, they kind of hand it off to me, kind of go through the rest. It takes me a couple weeks to put together the list. We fine tune it a little bit, and then we split up the bios. I typically write 250 to 500, so I kind of handle the second half. The first half of the bios is split up between 4 or 5 other writers. And I say from beginning to end, from our first call to when we finally get this together. And on top of that, we have to have photos, at least one picture for every page. So you get a block of guys from, 350 to 360, and we need artwork. And it's normally me who has to chase that to see, okay, we need a picture of Orange Cassidy. We need a picture of whatever to fit. So it probably takes about 10 weeks to get the whole thing together from start to finish. And it's right during the summertime, so, when everybody's out there enjoying the sunshine and kayaking, you can picture me and a couple of the other guys, Al Castle and some of the rest, Mike Bessler, sitting in front of our laptops and writing wrestling bios. That's what we do with our summer times.
Well, and like I said, it's worth it, and it's one of the highlights every year for every pro wrestler, even even myself. Like I said, when I found out I wasn't ranked this year, I was like, well, that sucks. So hopefully next year I'll be back. I have to beat The Miz. I have to get to number one. And if I do get to number one, Dan Murphy, I expect a plaque and a full ceremony on the top of a big hotel in downtown New York City on Pro Wrestling Illustrated's dime.
I guarantee it. If you're number one, I guarantee it.
All right. Dude, thank you so much for this. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward to hearing the reactions of everybody who was included and who was not.
Yeah, the ones who weren't included are the ones that worry me. But yeah, thank you very much, Chris. I really appreciate being on.
Cheers, man.
Thank you.
All right, the PWI Top 500 issue is on sale now. You can get a copy wherever magazines are sold. You can also purchase online at pwi-online.com. One of my favorite issues of Pro Wrestling Illustrated of the year, even though I've never been number one on the PWI Top 500, but I've never been number 500 either. What I have been is the proprietor and party host of Chris Jericho's Rocket Wrestling Rager at C Part 2. We set sail on January 20th. We are completely sold out, but you can put yourself on the waiting list if a cabin becomes available and get on board with me for a vacation of a lifetime with Ric Flair and the NWO and AEW and Fozzy and DDP and Kenny Omega, Young Bucks, you name it, everyone's going to be on there. Fluffy's going to be there, Gabriel Iglesias, Craig Gass, Bruce Jingles. We got a great lineup. So go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and put yourself on the waiting list. You still have a chance to go. We still have 4 months before we leave. And come see Fozzy. Unleashed in the West tour is on. We're in Tucson, Arizona tonight at the Encore. Tomorrow, September 21st, in El Paso at Speaking Rock. That's a free show, so come on down for that. September 22nd, we are in Albuquerque at the Landing Strip. Is that what we're called? The Launch Pad is where we are. The Landing Strip will be next month. And then don't forget September 25th in Dallas at Canton Hall, 26th in Houston at Warehouse Live, 27th Hattiesburg, Mississippi at Brewski's, and we finish up September 28th at Atlanta, Georgia at the Masquerade. That show looks like it's going to sell out, so buy your tickets soon. All ticket information at FozzyRock.com. You can also get all information for our VIP meet and greet program, one of the best in the business. We did, what did we do today? We did Judas, we did Nowhere to Run, we did Breaking the Law, we did Eat the Rich, and we did Cold Gin. So we play some cover songs you're not going to hear later on that night, some Fozzy songs you're not going to hear later on that night. We hang out with you, we take some pictures, we sign some stuff. Go check it all out at FozzyRock.com. All right, have a great weekend. But coming up on Wednesday, it's the host of Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at C Part 2, Fluffy. Gabriel Iglesias is going to be here. He's hilarious. He's going to tell us all about his great career and what he's going to do on the Rock and Rager as your host with the most. I'm your host here. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Stay hard. Stay heavy. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.